Welcome to episode 134 of the Into the Vertical Blank podcast. Today we have a very special treat, especially for ST fans. It's the 40th anniversary of the Atari ST this year, so a lot of our content will be focusing on that machine. Don't worry, we'll still cover all the other Atari computers and some of the video game systems. But today, we have two episodes focusing on the ST. These come from our video channel. First up, we have a segment focusing on the magic of SSI games for the Atari ST. Following that, we have a special on a newly found STE game engine for STOS. So buckle up and have fun with this episode.
Into the Vertical Blank.
I don't think there is an American computer game company that made more satisfying packaging than SSI, Strategic Simulations Incorporated. One could, of course, say that the packages for Infocom games, with odd shapes and feelies inside, are more collectible, or that the record sleeve-like packages for Electronic Arts games were more iconic, or even that the boxes for Origin Systems games felt more organic. But to me, SSI game packages were the most overall intriguing in a way to beckon the buyer to find out what the contents were inside. The discs, the instruction manuals, the reference cards, and of course, the catalogs. The wraparound, gorgeously painted box art, striking red logo, an enticing box back filled with screenshots and text, plus bullet-pointed features on the side, and just the way it felt when you opened the sturdy two-part box.
Into the vertical blank, Generation Atari. Into the vertical blank, Generation Atari.
SSI games were, in three words, weird, wild, and wonderful. To me, they were indicative of the first wave of home computer game companies. With no established rules, they were on their own to make up the rules as they went along, and wow, did they make a splash among 80s computer gamers, at least in the USA. Before I had an Atari ST, I knew SSI for the games they made for the Atari 8-bit line. Mostly, they were interesting-looking war games. I'd pore over the SSI catalog looking for the name Atari. In 1984, I would see things like War in Russia, Carrier Force, Battle for Normandy, Knights of the Desert, Tigers in the Snow, 50 Mission Crush. But among those war games were hidden a few fantasy titles like Shattered Alliance, Questron, The Kryton Masters, and The Cosmic Balance. But what really interested me at the time was the American Civil War and the ability on a computer to play out the wonderful battle drawings from Bruce Caton's Golden Book of the American Civil War. SSI offered the Battle for Shiloh, which I wanted to play badly for years. But most of these were hardcore war games, and to be honest, while the covers and box art and screenshots enthralled me, I really couldn't make heads or tails of the games. There were computerized versions of tabletop games, and while I made many attempts, I just could not really get into them. By 1986, when I was ready to sell the Atari 800 and get an Atari ST, the SSI catalog had grown, with many more fascinating sounding games that intrigued. War games still, like Warship, Kampfgruppe, Nom, and many more, plus two more American Civil War games, Battle for Antietam and Gettysburg, The Turning Point. I was still fascinated with the Civil War, and I tried the Gettysburg one, but again, I just could not get myself into it. And there was one more intriguing war game construction set. I bought this one and tried to make the Civil War game I always wanted, but alas, all it taught me was, again, that while I was intrigued by war games, I was not very good at them. What I did not notice while still trying to fight battles I couldn't win was all the fantasy RPG offerings from SSI that had grown and were starting to dominate their catalogs. For the Atari 800, they added Fantasy and Wizard's Crown, both of which I missed in my quest to refight the war between the states. So while I was always intrigued with the offerings of SSI, none of them ever grabbed me. Instead, it was Ultima 4 from Origin Systems that became my 10th and 11th grade muse, giving me another world to escape to as the realities of high school crashed all around me. Unlike war games, fantasy RPGs seemed to be my thing. I love creating a party of adventurers and setting out on a quest to conquer the evil bad guys. In fact, it was everything that was elusive in high school. In Ultima, I had a group of computer friends that stuck around with me and goals that were achievable. It gave me the satisfaction of success that was so elusive outside the computer in the corner of my bedroom. When we sold our Atari 800 at the end of 1986 to get an Atari ST, my unfinished Ultima 4 discs and save game went with it by accident. It was just a few weeks ago when I was able to right that wrong. But while I missed Ultima on the 8-bit Atari, it turned out a whole new world of fantasy RPGs was opening up on the 16-bit platforms, and nearly all of them came from SSI. However, it was not SSI that sold me first on RPGs for the Atari ST, it was FTL. Faster Than Light Games released Dungeon Master for the Atari ST in 1987, and it was mind-blowing. It was all the promise of 16-bit gaming rolled into a single 3.5-inch disc. Multi-character parties exploring three-dimensional dungeons in real time. It was the closest thing I'd ever experienced to playing a real-life role-playing game. I would have been sold on FTL games if they had managed to create any more that were worth my time. But the follow-up to Dungeon Master, Chaos Strikes Back, was incredibly difficult while seemingly the same game. And there was very little after that for the Atari ST. This left a gulf, and that gulf was filled by none other than SSI. The first Atari ST fantasy game from SSI I played was Wizard's Crown, a highly tactical RPG, while not a graphics powerhouse, was a very fulfilling contest. This is followed by the granddaddy fantasy RPG trilogy, for me anyway, from SSI, Winston Douglas Wood's Fantasy 1, 2, and 3. It was in these games I found my true love of computer RPGs. With a hint of Ultima and a smattering of Wizard's Crown, the fantasy games combined overhead maps, random encounters, intense level grinding, and tactical ranked combat with a slick user interface and pleasing 16-bit graphics and sound. To me, they were the perfect package of gameplay and visuals, in many ways have never been surpassed in my mind for the pure enjoyment of a computer RPG. When I began playing JRPGs in the 2000s, it was hard for me not to notice that the early versions of Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, Phantasy Star, and the Tales series, while obviously influenced by Japanese JRPGs, Ultima and Wizardry, also felt very much like playing the fantasy games. I felt like there was some sort of unspoken influence, but I've yet to find anyone who has ever said that the fantasy games were an influence on JRPGs. However, when I learned the fact that Fantasy IV was only ever released in Japan, it did not sway my opinion. After the fantasy series, I dove into games like Questron 2 and Demon's Winter, both very unique and interesting RPGs from SSI. And I think those terms, unique and interesting, were what drove my love for what I call the golden age of SSI RPGs. Each title and series had its own unique take on the genre. From the maps, the towns, the dungeons, the battles, the stats, character advancement, most of the games mixed a different concoction of how the creators believed an RPG could be translated to a computer game. To me, the only rule at SSI was to take a chance and make compelling strategic fantasy games. One of those chances was Road War 2000. It was released in 1987 for the Atari ST by SSI. Developed by Westwood, who were also responsible for the sequel, Road War Europa, the Fantasy and Question Atari ST ports for SSI, as well as many other games, they would go on to create the genre-defining Dune 2 for the IBM PC. Robert Calfee and Jeffrey Johnson are credited as programmers, and Jeffrey Johnson as the designer for Road War 2000, but they might not have actually worked on the Atari ST and Amiga versions of the games. It's hard to tell from the credits. Road War 2000 is indicative of the type of games SSI produced. There was hardly anything cookie-cutter or Me Too about SSI games. To SSI, genres and walls only existed to be subverted and broken down. In the game, you play the leader of a gang traveling around post-apocalyptic America, building your forces and trying to find a cure for the disease that has wiped out the country. You gain supplies and personnel, new vehicles, fight battles, gain territory, etc. It's difficult to categorize as it's not a game that lived in any established genres. Like most SSI 16-bit games, it has a slick interface, a nice graphics and sound, and those helped to sell the outlandish story of the downfall of the USA from an infectious disease and a government who can't find a way to control it. It's funny then to me that Road War 2000 was one of the last SSI games that really meant something to me. After that, SSI acquired the Dungeons & Dragons license and began making the beloved Gold Box series of games, only one of which was made for the Atari ST. After that, the company seemed to change its focus to AD&D specifically, and there was hardly room for new ideas or new concepts when it came to computer RPGs. At first, I jumped at the chance to play D&D on my ST, but the side-scrolling, action-oriented Heroes of the Lance and Dragons of Flame felt like a misfire to me. The first and only Gold Box RPG for the Atari ST was Pool of Radiance, but as far as I know, it was never released in the USA, or at least I could never find a copy. The final SSI Atari ST game I purchased and played was Stellar Crusade, a space combat game with neat isometric graphics. I so wanted to enjoy it, but it just could not fill the hole left by the unique SSI RPG games of the past. By the 1991 SSI catalog, you'd be hard-pressed to find many games that were not somehow related to AD&D, especially any CRPGs, and you'd find even fewer made for the Atari ST. What I miss now are the nuances of buying and opening and playing an SSI game. The beautiful boxes, the sounds of the components inside, the manuals, the discs, the disc labels, the reference card with machine-specific information, and of course, the catalog, the glorious catalogs that showed all the other games that would be coming. I've searched high and low for a sealed copy of an SSI game that meant something to me, and a few weeks ago, I located a copy of Road War 2000. So I decided to buy it and open it and feel what it was like in the 80s to have an SSI game from the store, bring it home, and marvel at the wonders that were inside. And here's the opening process. And now it's free. For the first time in more than 35 years, I'm going to open an SSI game that's new. There's the disc, the beautiful 3.5-inch disc. Oh, let me turn this over because you gotta see it. And there you have it. The closest I believe I will ever get again to going down to the local computer store, buying an SSI game for my Atari ST, bringing it home, putting the disc in my 3.5-inch floppy drive, watching the title screen load, and playing the rich contents inside. To be whisked away to a digital realm as the harsh realities of high school in the 80s melt away, and I enthrall myself in another adventure brought to me by Strategic Simulations Incorporated.
The Atari STE is the forgotten 16-bit platform. Released in late 1989, the 520 STE was a step up from the original Atari ST, about 95% compatible, but with enhanced capabilities that closely matched but did not exceed the Amiga 500. Even though the ST had been quite popular, and probably because of the installed base of non-STE users, most developers ignored the STE in favor of the plain old ST, relegating it and the STs to afterthought status and a dwindling game library as the 90s went on. This part of history is the second big part of the Vertical Blank. The first being the fall of Atari in 1984, when Steve and I suddenly lost the dream of ever being able to work for and make games for Atari. What would have happened in the 90s if game developers put as much effort into STE versions of software as they did with Amiga 500 versions? We have a few great examples such as Obsession Pinball and Stardust, but those are few and far between. Over the last 35 years, a small dedicated group of various ST hardcore developers have produced some amazing STE titles, and have also produced the ST Game Tools development system. But the Amiga and Genesis Mega Drive routinely receive new titles, while the STE sits in the corner waiting for its chance to dance. The Scorpion engine for the Amiga and Genesis Mega Drive is one huge reason why. It's a brilliant, easy-to-use game development system that a good programmer can use to create very nice games for those systems. The STE does not have such a toolset. I've looked at the ST Game Tools dev system, and so far it's too complex for me to get my head around. It might be far too complex for most hobby game developers. I might be wrong, and will give it a chance sometime, but I've yet to even get a good dev system build that can compile the demo code. Yes, this is on me, but I don't have much time these days, and if I want to make an STE game, I need an easier system to use. My two choices are STOS, along with the various STE extensions, and GFA Basic, with the toolset like SpriteWorks 2. Up to this point, I've been unsuccessful in producing anything worthwhile with either system. A few years back, I did a lot of code and graphics for a Scrabble clone for the ST, using the STOS Missing Link extensions. Here is a demo of that running. It uses both pre-shifted background tiles and pre-shifted foreground sprites. It runs at a decent frame rate. But after years of playing and making videos on ST games, I have seen horizontal scrolling games that already perform like this. There's no way that pre-shifting alone will make a 30 FPS plus game on the STE. For the uninitiated, the ST and STE have no sprites. The memory map for its graphics is very similar to the Commodore 64, but with static 16x16 blocks instead of 8x8 blocks. Unlike the Commodore 64, all 16 current palette colors from 512 on the ST and 4096 on the STE can be used in any block. The 16 color palette can also be changed every scan line, but this takes processor, so usually the 16 color palette was changed only one or two times per screen at most. Because of this, when you want to display a moving object that bridges the 16 pixel boundary horizontally, a lot of processing is needed to shift all of the bits needed to change the memory locations of the graphics. To compensate for this, a process known as pre-shifting was used to hold in memory the sprites in positions that cross horizontal boundaries. This takes extra RAM, but makes smooth games possible. The exact same idea was also employed with background tiles to make smooth horizontal scrolling possible without hardware assistance. The STE changed all of this. It didn't change the memory map, but it did allow for fast shifting background graphics with its hardware scrolling and foreground graphics with its hardware blitter chip. Sound on the ST was always a little dire, although there are many developers who wrote incredible drivers and made great use of its capabilities. Bubble Bobble and Turrican 2 come to mind. For a hobbyist developer like myself, the STE adds a stereo DMA sound chip with the ability to play mod files while games are playing. It also has a mixer that combines the DMA sound with the ST sound channels for extra sound effects, music, or mono samples. With STOS, it's pretty easy to use the STE sound, but the caveat is that the interrupts needed to play mod files and mix sound interfere with the blitter chip, making it necessary to do very complicated low-level code to get around it. Needless to say, I'm looking for a set of tools that doesn't require hardcore low-level coding to accomplish what I need. So given all of this, can I find a system of pieces and parts, create a few demo games, and publish documentation that will help both me and others target the STE with more games? The first system I want to try to do this with is STOS, along with the associated extensions. While Missing Link is not compatible with the STE, the control extension by Les Greenlaw is. Les created this extension in the 90s, and while it's been available for hobbyists to use for a while now, the final version was not. But this has been found. It's now available, And among other little tools it contains, it can be used to do hardware scrolling and play Ninja Tracker mod files. Les has been developing games lately for the Spectrum Next, and he was happy to discuss the ST and his extension with me.
Yeah, sure. So my first computer was actually a Sinclair ZX Spectrum, I think in about 1984. They had, you know, if you see one, but they had basically they're famous for basically having a rubber keyboard, effectively, yeah. That's their kind of claim to fame. And I had that for about 3 years and taught myself basic programming on that. And then I think in 1987, I think the Atari ST had been released into the UK, and I was lucky enough to get a 1040 STFM for, I think, the Christmas of, 1987. And then obviously STOS was released a year after that, I think in 98, and I pretty much bought that immediately, was kind of programming STOS, I think, from pretty much the first day of its release into the UK, I think. Yeah. So I wrote a couple of games called Biohazard 1 and 2 in STOS. Actually, one of those got ST format. I think, I can't remember what it's called, a Smash, whatever it was called when they did games, got over 90%. So I got a good score for one of those. Then I wrote a couple of extensions for STOS. One was called the Ninja Tracker, which is pretty much the kind of default tracker extension for STOS. And then a while after that, I wrote a extension called the Control extension. So obviously the missing link is probably the most well-known STOS extension. That kind of massively improved STOS's ability to basically write maps and what we call bobs to the screen. It was far ahead of STOS's own inbuilt sprite support, but the issue with it, though it was incredibly fast, in order to support games run on the STE, it only supported the ST's default lower resolution of 320x200. But if you're going to write STE games, basically you've got to be able to support a viewport that's not the default 320x200. So basically, the control extension's main purpose was to basically be able to write, you know, images and map tiles and things to a resolution that wasn't necessarily 320x200. Could basically be anything you liked. And once that was in place, we basically gave STOS the ability to write smooth scrolling horizontal shooters for the first time in STOS. Yeah. Had things like also the JAG pad support as well, so you could plug in, you know, the Jaguar controllers that the STE supported. So its main reason was to do missing link type functionality, but expand it to the STE basically as well.
The 3.6 version of Les's control extension had been missing for over 30 years. On the Facebook group STOS Coders, Les was repeatedly asked, especially by annoying people like me, if he has the final version. Up until just a few weeks ago, Les was empty-handed because he'd put those memories and discs away, like many of us.
Not sure if you know someone called Neil Halliday, yeah?
Yes.
But basically, so he deserves the kudos. He managed to rescue the files for me, yeah? Essentially, my father passed away last year, and I was basically going through his things a few weeks ago, and I knew somewhere I had a box of my old floppy disks from the 80s somewhere in his belongings, and I've luckily managed to find a box of floppy disks, and some of those were obviously STOS related things. Wow. Yeah, so I contacted Neil Halliday because obviously, you know, most people, none of the IT equipment I've got now is able to read those 3.25, you know, sorry, 3.5-inch disks from the 80s. So I contacted Neil. I said, you know, have you got anything that could read these? I think I can't remember the device is called a Grease Weasel or a Grease Monkey, but it's basically a device that allows a PC to read with a specially adapted floppy drive to basically read SD formatted discs from the 80s. Yeah. So I sent a number of discs to Neil. I said, I think we've got some really interesting stuff here. Yeah. If you can get this stuff off the discs, then obviously we'll release it to the community. And he was successful in about three quarters of the disc I sent him, which was great, really. So,
Included with Les's extension, he created various demos and games to help people understand exactly what it was capable of, along with a map creation tool and a tool to convert STOS sprites into the image format his extension uses for pre-shifting. Les's map tool is particularly well done and is light years ahead of most other tools I've used on the ST. The three games he created are very well crafted, but he doesn't even seem to remember creating them at all. Ah, that vertical blank.
It interests me. So I'd completely forgotten I'd written these until about 2 weeks ago when I was going through the files on the disk, and it's like, it must have been me, but I've got no recollection of writing these. I was surprised actually how good the Space Invaders one was.
They're good.
One of the things that's missing from the set of games Les created is an actual STE horizontal scroller. That's where I come in.
So, you could be able to get pretty close to native assembly for it. But yeah, I think it probably does need a proper example of an STE horizontal scroll with sprites example.
The big question I've always had with STE hardware scrolling is how to set up the necessary horizontal tile-based screen, what width to use, and how many temp screens are needed.
Yes, exactly that. So I think what you'd need, I mean, again, it's a long time ago now, but I think what you'd need to define is, let's say, start with horizontal shooter first, yeah, is you'd need to define a number of banks which are slightly wider than the normal, let's say, I don't know, 336 by 320, something like that, yeah? And so essentially, you have like, you know, your logic and physics like you do normally with stuff, yeah? But essentially, what you're doing is, let's say, you're kind of, yeah, you say you're basically showing a screen, but then in the background you're kind of drawing the next column in the background. Yeah. So I think basically you need four screens, each of which are the same size, 16 pixels wider than the normal DOS screen, 16 pixels wider than the normal STEs because you're going to be scrolling. Yeah. So I think in, let's call them logic, physic, temp one and temp two. Yeah. So I think in temp one to start with, you draw an entire screen, yeah, but like one column wider in terms of tiles than your normal screen. So basically, you filled up a complete 336 by 200 screen, yeah.
I've always wanted to use the Blitter in combination with hardware scrolling and the DMA sound channels, like the Amiga can. But when looking at SpriteWorks 2 for GFA Basic, the developer in his documentation said that the best thing about the STE was the hardware scrolling. He added that the Blitter, while a good little device, needs to be used in hog mode, and that interferes with DMA processes such as playing ninja samples or using the DMA sound processor. Les agrees.
Yes, exactly. So I think the fastest would be with the Blitter, but presumably you're going to want to be playing music or samples at the same time, yeah? So your challenge with the Blitter is going to be that you only get that speed advantage if you can tell the Blitter to hog the processor.
One thing we'd want to normally use the Blitter for is copying 336 by 200 horizontal pixels to an off-screen memory location as fast as possible. Then we would use the STE's horizontal scrolling to scroll the viewport to the correct location on the last tile. Finally, we would copy this to the logical screen to be swapped with the physical screen on the vertical blank. This takes time, and the Blitter would be a fast way to tackle it. But Les has solved this problem without the Blitter.
Yes, that's right. Because what the other main part of the extension is that it's able to do screen copies, again, of screens that are non-traditional width and height. Yeah, so you can say, right, so I want you to, so let's say in temp one we've got a full screen drawn, but like one column wider than the normal. You're right. I want you to copy this entire screen onto, let's say, the logic, yeah? Yeah? And then use the ST scroll commands to offset it between 0 to 15 to get that lovely smooth. Yeah, to get that lovely smooth, necessarily single pixel scrolling, yeah? Exactly. And you should be able to copy that screen pretty much 50 times a second almost, yeah? Because you're not doing anything, you're not having to shift anything, yeah? It's just literally take this 32K plus whatever another column is and just basically blast it onto your logic, yeah?
An interesting advancement over any scrolling engine I've ever created is Les's idea that you need a fourth screen, which will have the next set of screen tiles ready with a new tile column in the 320 to 335 position. It can be created during the 16 frames the current screen and tiles are being animated to the output. This is one thing I will need to get my head around during the coming weeks.
Now, the other thing you need to do in the meantime is so that'll give the ability to scroll basically 0 to 15 pixels, yeah, left to right. But obviously, you've got to prepare for the time that you've gone 15 pixels forward, yeah? And then basically, you need to basically start again because you need to draw the next column and the next column. So I think at the as well as copying that entire screen across, I think you need to be preparing another version of the screen that's going to be ready once you scrolled 15 pixels to the right, if you know what I mean, yeah? Right. So, but I think you've got, let's say you're doing single pixel scrolling, then you've basically got 16 cycles to basically get an entire next screen drawn, and then you kind of flip between the two, yeah? Exactly. And then obviously you've got to spend the effort drawing your spaceships and your bullets and everything else. But the great thing about that is you're not having to shift any of the tiles. You don't actually even need the shifted version of the tiles because you're using the hardware scroll to basically... So I'll see that's the big difference between the missing link. If you want to do something similar, you have to store the pre-shifted tile version to draw the map. This you don't because you're relying on the hardware scroll to do that for you. Also, the downside, I said, is maybe we need like more kind of screen copies than we would normally.
Okay, I'm starting to get my head around this now. We need the extra screens to set up scrolling. Then I can use Les's image command to put sprites on the screen because it understands a 336 pixel wide screen.
Yeah. So, but you are going to have to pre-shift the sprites because obviously they're moving in independently of the hardware scroll. So you are going to So, but again, the image is the right one to use, and the Space Invader and the Centipede one all have examples of that. So, yeah, you absolutely do. You are going to need to pre-shift your spaceship and your bullets and everything else. Yeah.
So, to get a mod file plane while doing all this graphics work, I can use Les's Ninja Tracker extension.
Yeah. So, if you want to use Ninja Tracker at the same time, it would be absolutely fine. Yeah. I think the challenge might come, I think, in sound effects. Without trying to remember stuff, I've forgotten. I'm not sure what the right thing to do sound effects at the same time is going to be. I think, remember, the STE extension had like sample playing stuff in there, yeah?
Asia Burroughs created a STOS STE extension in the 90s, which Les confirms we can still use as a sample mixer for the JAG pad, etc. We just can't use the scrolling in that extension because it's buggy.
Absolutely, yeah, because we know it's bugged, basically, yeah.
Okay.
So there's an issue when you go from, I think it's 15 pixels, basically it jerks, there's some pixel value that basically it jerks, which is again why people wanted it redone. Right. There's definitely some investigation to be done around some, can we use Control Ninja Tracker and some kind of STE-based sample playing all at the same time, yeah?
It turns out we can also use the missing link extension, aside from its graphics commands, to do things like sample playing along with the Ninja Tracker to combine sounds and music at the same time.
Yes, I don't see any reason why not, because behind the scenes, Control isn't doing anything with interrupts. The only challenges you might have are when you try to use the Blitter at the same time. It's absolutely worth a try. I absolutely think a decent STE horizontal scrolling game is something that's doable. So we should absolutely try and get your scramble game
ported over.
I'm very rusty. I've not done any stuff for like 30 years. I'm rusty, but I'm absolutely interested in solving some of these problems with you. Yeah.
Oh boy. Looks like I'm pronouncing Les's name wrong this whole time. It's Green Hall, not Green Law.
Green Hall. You ignore the GH on the end, both.
Lately, Les has been working on games for the Spectrum Next, an updated Spectrum with more graphics and sound capabilities.
But in terms of you know, home stuff. Not sure if you know, but a few years ago, there basically, you know, obviously in the UK, there was a product called the Sinclair ZX Spectrum that was a big computer. Yeah, so a few years ago, basically, somebody developed a new version of it called the ZX Spectrum Next. Yeah. I'm very active in that community. There is a version of BASIC called Boreal for it, which again it runs on it's a cross compiled thing. You run the PC, but it's very, very, very similar to stuff. So obviously, you know, this computer's got, you know, 256 kind of graphics, hardware scrolling, you know, hardware samples. Although it's you know, an 8-bit processor, it runs at 28 Hz. So it's pretty comparable to an ST in terms of, well, actually, there are some things you can do you couldn't do with an ST, like, you know, 256 color screens, right, and stuff. But
it turns out that Les's extension also includes PAL splitting commands, so we can add more than 16 colors to the STE's screen.
I've got a feeling that the PAL split, either example or command in the extension itself.
Okay.
But again, how it works with all the interrupts, all this stuff's very sensitive to what's going on interrupt wise. I've developed two games for the Spectrum Next so far. One of them, again, just got a Crash Smash award a couple of months ago.
Les's Spectrum Next games are stunning. Xeno Brigade is a tile-based strategy game that looks like it could be an STE game made with these tools.
Yeah. Like I said, that's got a very active and enthusiastic retro scene in the UK at the moment. It's I went to we'll call it a Crash Live, basically a Sinclair computer get together in November. There's like 600 people there, basically completely filled. Wow. This entire hotel. But exactly, it's got a really big. Because obviously, yeah, there's been attempts to remake things like the Commodore 64 and everything else, but they've been like, you know, $1,000 each or something. This is quite expensive still, but still, you know, it's had like the original design of the Sinclair Spectrum, did the design for the case and stuff. So it's a really authentic what this computer could have been had it continued down its natural evolution rather than, you know.
It seems that the Spectrum Next really taps into the potential of Sinclair Spectrum owners Vertical Blank, and now I really want to tap in to STE owners Vertical Blank.
Absolutely, but it's a shame that, you know, the STE didn't do as well as it could have done, because there's clearly untapped potential there that was, same with the Falcon, you know, clearly untapped potential there that was, we never got to see, basically, because it wasn't the level of. Have you seen that racing game that came out for the STE in the last?
Les was referring to Faster, a 2024 release by Jonathan Thomas, creating a 60 FPS racing game on the Atari STE. Jonathan is now working on an upgraded Amiga version. Jonathan's incredible achievement aside, Les and I agree on ST and Amiga conversions from back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem was, because it's so easy to port stuff from the ST to Amiga, obviously the Spectrum of comms is completely different, so you couldn't port one to the other, so therefore, right, you may as well have done your best effort on the Spectrum, because you couldn't port it anyway. But with the ST, it's like, you could do a really slapdash ST version and then port it to Amiga and make it better. So that's kind of what happened, I think.
So I want to combine pre-existing tools with my documentation, samples, and games to allow ST developers to make more games. The first step is to go back and make the Scramble engine work properly. Hopefully, this is just the first part of many. I want to thank Les for coming on and agreeing to help in any way he can.
Absolutely. I feel like I just have to dig out the brain cells from that era. Yeah. Not many left.
This could be the start of a new era of STE game development. But even if I just finish one game, I hope it will be an inspiration and wake-up call to other STE developers, and even just retro game developers in general, to start making games for the system. So, will this work? Can I combine STOS with extensions and Neil Halliday's VS Code STOS plugin to make a simple, modern STE game development system? Stay tuned to find out.
were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X-generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full-stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blink. There, we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.